Andrew's beginning a new sermon series for us this morning, and he'll say a little bit more about that. But the whole sermon series is actually based on the Beatitudes, those familiar words from Matthew's Gospel that Jesus used in part of the Sermon on the Mount. And we're going to share in reading those words together this morning before Andrew comes to preach. And I'm going to read the words in the light white italic type, if you'll join in the words in the bold yellow type, as we are reminded of what Jesus said to those people, and he says to us today, as we come to listen to what he has to say to us through Andrew this morning. One day, as he saw the crowds gathering, Jesus went up on the mountainside and sat down. His disciples gathered around him, and he began to teach them. God blesses those who are poor in spirit and realize their need for him, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. God blesses those who mourn, for they will be comforted. God blesses those who are humble, for they will inherit the whole earth. God blesses those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be satisfied. God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. God blesses those whose hearts are pure, for they will see God. God blesses those who work for peace, for they will be called the children of God. God blesses those who are persecuted for doing right, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. God blesses you when people mock you and persecute you and lie about you and say all sorts of evil things against you because you are my followers. Be happy about it. Be very glad, for a great reward awaits you in heaven. And remember that ancient prophets were persecuted in the same way. Andrew.
In my early 20s, I worked for my father and his uncle, my uncle, in a haulage, storage and distribution company. And one of my jobs was carrying 100-weight bags. Some days I would actually carry 2,000 bags. I was very fit, but I wrecked my back. I did a lot of damage to my lower back, muscles and slight bone damage. And for over 20 years, I suffered back problems. Two or three times a year, I would end up in bed with back pain, could hardly move. At one point, I was in bed for 5 weeks. And then a friend of mine who knew a back specialist sports physio took me down to his surgery, stripped me down to my undies, and this back specialist sports physio just kind of went through my whole body. And at the end of it, she listed the things that were wrong with it, and I thought, oh no, I'm crippled for life. And then she went, but we can fix that. I'm thinking, no, you can't. And she did, amazingly. After 20 years of suffering back problems, she fixed my back. And one of the things she did, she was taught me about back management. She said, whatever you do, don't walk around with a briefcase. Well, I liked walking around with a briefcase. Cause, well, you're somebody, aren't you? Well, you think you are if you walk around with a briefcase. She says, look, whatever's in your briefcase, she said, take it out and you need to put it into one of these. She said, don't use a briefcase anymore, use a rucksack. So what was in my briefcase, I began to take it out and then I would put it instead into my rucksack. And it took me a while to learn this, but I began to realise that by putting things in a rucksack actually meant that I carried the load a lot differently. It was spread. It was easier to work and walk with. And things like that just made my back and my life so much more whole. It was amazing, really. Simple trick. So all you guys who kind of walk around with briefcases, whatever you've got in them, whatever they are, just take it and put it in your rucksack. Because by doing that, You don't need this anymore. Whatever it means, whatever it is to you, you can just keep it all safe and sound in your rucksack. And by doing that, you find that you actually carry it loads, loads better. A lot easier, a lot better. And I've discovered that some of the things I carry, they're not going to go away, because some of them are my memory. And whilst I forget things in the short term, because my random access memory is going, in the long term, I have lots of memories. And those memories shape who I am. Some of them are great memories, some of them are bad memories. Some of the memories that remind me just how weak, how needy I actually am. And by learning about them, and recognising them, being honest and owning up to them. Anyway, Van Gogh rucksacks, much to be recommended. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Jesus speaks what we call the Beatitudes. Some people, you might hear them explain, and you call them blessed attitudes. How do you catch a cloud and pin it down? You know that line from that old song from Sound of Music. But happiness is a bit like that. And blessed, actually, Jesus is saying is happy. We might say they're the happy attitudes. But I guess if you've got any wisdom at all about you, you'll know that you can't buy happiness by buying a holiday. You might buy rest or relief. It doesn't make you completely and utterly happy for the rest of your life, because you come home, and I know what you do when you come home. You start thinking about the next one. It doesn't fix you for life. You can't buy happiness by having the home, the dream home you ever wanted, because there'll always be something else you want to add to it, like a 32-inch flat-screen TV. Some of you know about that in me, anyway. Jesus said, actually, the happy attitudes, the attitudes that make you blessed whole as a person, are actually attitudes that bring you to God, recognizing your needs. And this first attitude is Jesus saying, look, if you want to be inside God's place, inside God's kingdom, then the way in is simply to be humble enough to recognize that you've got needs. Happy are the needy, in some respect, Jesus is saying. He actually said it later on, and Luke, in his writing about Jesus, said this. Jesus said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. And throughout my life, and through reading God's book, the Bible, I've discovered that God constantly deals with needy people, people who are broken, people who are hurting, people who do things wrong. God deals with problem people. Abraham was called a friend of God, but he lied to kings and made his wife very vulnerable to them by his lying. Jacob had a powerful meeting with God, but all his life tricked his brother. Moses, who God used powerfully to release his people from 300 years of slavery in Egypt, actually began his career by murdering someone. David, who is actually called a man after God's own heart, some of you know the story, committed adultery, which led him to commit murder and a political, powerful cover-up. Elijah, a man who was powerful in God, actually prone to depression, severe depression that even entertained thoughts of taking his own life or wishing that God would. Peter, a great leader, but actually we know ran away from confrontation to the point that he would even deny Jesus. And Andrew Gardner, me, who does love God, but I know the me I see in the mirror is also very weak person and carrying around loads of stuff that's not to do with work but everything to do with my life. So what do we do? And one of the things we've got to do if we're going to enter the kingdom of God recognizing our need is face the cause of our problems and recognize that we have a tendency to do wrong. Paul wrote to the Roman church and he said this, I don't understand what I do, for what I want to do, I do not do. but what I hate, I do. That doesn't kind of quite add up, does it? But you might have been in that tussle. It's kind of like a tug of war. You know what you should do, but you don't do it. And you know what you shouldn't do, and you end up doing it. Ever done that? You don't have to nod, but it would help. No, don't. But I'll nod, because I know that that's me. I have a tendency to do wrong. We also have a desire to be God. And it's not that we want to create universes or stuff like that. It's that we have this desire that we are the absolute centre of our lives. And that only me counts. I guess it's a selfish desire in a way, but if we're honest, and I know if I'm honest, that's there in me. We attempt to play God. Sometimes because of things that have happened to us, or things that are happening around us, we try to control our image, our need to be accepted, our need to be liked. Do you want to be liked? I've never met anybody who says, I want to be hated. We try to control other people. We have a need for power. And you might think, oh, no, I don't, because I have no power anyway. But if I took your power to work away, or your power to walk away, your power to cook dinner away and you couldn't do it anymore, if I took your power to spend money away, don't tell me you don't have power and you don't need it. We actually all have power and we all need it. But we also try and control others and take power for ourselves to build ourselves up. We try and control our problems. I love a story that Dr. James Dobson tells about his little child. And some of you, you've had the privilege of little children, you'll know it. When his son was trying to do something and he wouldn't accept his father's help. And he had this little thing that he said, I can do it all by myself. Have you said that yourself? Not as a 5-year-old, maybe as a 55-year-old. You still say it, I can do it all by myself. And you know jolly well, there are times, especially when it comes to life, especially it comes to dealing with some of the stuff that we're carrying around that's making us limp or making us lean. We can't do it all by ourselves. And we also try to control our pain. Some of us have been trying to do this for decades. We were hurt as children. Maybe we were brought up in a broken home and we saw mum and dad fighting. Maybe we were abused. Maybe we've lost a job that was our career path. And it left us wondering, who the heck am I now? I am not the sum of my work. And that hurts. Maybe somebody in our lives died tragically. And the grief of that still leaves us with a broken heart. And we know that pain's still there. Maybe somebody broke a relationship with us that left us wounded. And we try to control the pain. Some of us control it through drinking. Some of us control it through having loads of relationships. Some of us controlling it just by stuffing it down. And then we wonder why we're numb to everybody. So we attempt to play God by taking the problems of our life and saying, I can do this all by myself. And what we need to do is exactly what Jesus said in this beatitude, is admit our need. What did he say? Happy, whole, blessed are those who are needy enough, poor in spirit. That's what it means. Recognizing their need of God, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Not just facing the cause of our problems, but the consequences. There are some clear things that happen when we've got those kind of struggles inside. First of all, maybe the consequence is that we're frightened. It's interesting, the very first problem in the world is recorded in the book of Genesis. And man and woman have disobeyed God. And they know in that disobedience they're into problems. And so they hide themselves. And when God comes looking, the man says, "I was naked, so I hid." Almost like a little child who's done something wrong and he runs and hides in his wardrobe where nobody can find him, or under his bed, just to escape the cause and the consequence of the trouble. And we don't do that because we're grown-ups. So what we do is we put on an everything's okay mask, don't we? And we say, "Hi, how are you? I'm fine, thank you." And underneath, we're dying inside. Underneath, we're going through pain. Underneath, we're crippled inside. But we don't let people know because we're frightened of them seeing who we really are. Sometimes we live with frustration. The psalmist, David, this guy who committed adultery and murder, got to places spiritually where that spiritual frustration took over him. He said, "Blessed is the man whose sin the Lord doesn't count against him." And then he says this, "When I kept silent, when I hid," he said, "my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long." There was this wrestling match going on in his spirit, in his soul, in his heart, that he couldn't get away from until somehow, eventually, he let it go and he told God about it. Some of us live with that kind of internal, frustrating wrestling match. Why am I like I am? Why doesn't it go away? And that leads to another consequence of the problem is fatigue. Did you know that denial demands energy? Hiding and putting on masks, pretending everything's okay when it's not really, actually leaves you internally very, very tired. And some of us, that's exactly where we're at. We're just fed up of hiding, fed up of the mask. We wish we could let it go, and it just leaves us constantly fatigued. Maybe we've gone to the doctors and said, "I don't sleep at nights." Maybe we go, "I'm always, always, always tired." It's just a consequence of this denial. And then failure. The proverb writer writes this: "He who conceals his sin doesn't prosper. Whoever confesses and renounces him finds mercy." Feeling a failure, failing, fearing failure. What's that? Feeling a failure, actually failing, fearing failure. Those things can all hit us, hurt us, or drive us. So many successful people were successful not because they were successful. It was because they feared failure, and that made them driven. And we have to recognize that's part of our humanity. So we've got a cause for our problems we tend to do wrong. We've got consequences that actually leave us inside carrying this heavy, heavy load. But is there a signpost to a cure? If you have pain or illness, you consult a doctor, don't you? I've had a toothache for the last 5 days, so I consulted the dentist. Frightened of abscesses because I've had 3 abscesses that have left me with no teeth. I'm just scared that it's going to get forwards to the front, so I've got none at the front left either. But I'm the last to finish our meal because I can't chew too well. You didn't want to know that, really, I know. But anyway, if it's time to get your problems out, you may as well get them all out, okay, right? So I've got 3 molars missing, and I'm frightened that, oh no, I've got toothache, is it another abscess? So I'm running antibiotics at the moment just to see if that clears it up. You know, but the pain's there, so I consult a doctor. But when we're running around with the kind of pain and kind of wrestling in our hearts, time and time again, we live with the, "I can do this all by myself." And actually, some of us get into our 40s and our 50s, and we crash and we wonder why. And actually, the reason is because we've tried to carry it for so long. And we get to a point where we can't limp and we can't lean anymore. So what do? I think one of the best places to ever get to is to admit your weakness. Admit your weakness. Paul the Apostle writer wrote to the Corinthian church, and he was honest enough to say that he'd been praying to God And he's saying, God, I've got a problem. He calls it a weakness, and he says, will you take it away? Now, we don't know what Paul's weakness was. Some people think it could have been an eye problem, that his eyesight was deteriorating. Others think that it was a temptation to sin. And Paul was a man like all men and would have gone through kind of temptations. But we're never quite told. But it's clear that God says, no, I'm gonna let you live with that weakness. But then Paul, as he thinks about it, he thinks what he's been through weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, difficulties. He realizes that in that place, that's where he actually becomes strong. So how do we do that? I think, first of all, we admit that we're powerless to change our past. Some of us have had horrible pasts, hurtful pasts that have left us limping, left us leaning. You can't change that. You can't turn the clock back, make it all right and nice again. Can't be done. And you know that you're carrying a huge load now that still hurts. But maybe just to simply say, God, I can't change the past. I'm not God. Trying to pretend it didn't happen doesn't work. The best thing I can do is own it and recognize that it was very real. Admit that I'm powerless to control many of the things that are around me when I keep trying to do that. And recognize that sometimes when we're trying to control things around us, it's so that they make us safe because we fear the danger of not having things in place. We like it when everything's neat and tidy and in place because that makes us feel okay. But some of us actually have to let go of that need to control, especially when we're controlling others and trying to stop them from getting too near to hurt us. Admit that I'm powerless to cope with some of the things in my life, harmful habits, harmful behaviors, harmful actions. Sometimes it leads us into relationships that we wonder, why do things keep going wrong? I need a relationship because I need love and I need to give love. But I'm locked here. I'm into a harmful situation. And how do we break out of that and change it? And maybe what we've got to do is simply say, I'm weak. I can't do it all by myself. And the place of weakness brings us to a place of being humble before God and daring to pray a very simple prayer, a very humble prayer that says, God, I can't. Will you help me? God, take my life because I'm making a mess of it. Take my life and help me. You know, I absolutely don't mind leaning on God. Some people say, oh, you're just using God as a crutch. Too right. He's the God who made this universe. He's the God who is so completely and utterly loving, I can dare to put my trust thoroughly in him. And he's the God who, when I had quite a big breakdown 10 years ago and ended off work for 6 months, wondering whether I would ever come back into the ministry, living on tranquilizers, needing counseling, and praying using liturgy because I couldn't pray anymore. He's the God who, when I felt I was hanging on to him by a slender thread, was the God who had a very firm grasp of me because he loves me to bits. And I can dare to say to him, I need you. And he loves to step in those moments of our humility and our need and say, here I am. So dare to pray that prayer. I need you, God. And practically, 3 things. First, we've talked about the prayer. Pray about it openly. Simply give it to God. And I don't mean to say, God, you know that I was hurt as a child. If that hurt happened because your parents were divorced, but you lived through some of the horrendous arguments, dare to pray this prayer. God, when my parents argued and shouted and screamed at each other, When my parents even hit each other, I crawled inside myself in fear that it would be me next. I crawled inside myself for the fear of the future, worried that our family was going to break up. And when it did, the pain was so enormous that's been what I've been carrying around. Don't just say, God, it hurt when Dad and Mum got divorced. Dare to be real. Dare to be honest and open. Write about it. You think, why? Sometimes writing it down helps you see it clearer. Nobody has to read it. You could write it, tear it up, burn it, throw it away. But sometimes to dare to write, God, when I control other people to make me feel safe, I know I hurt them. I know I dominate them. I know that's wrong. To write that down is actually a very brave step. It's very open, very raw. But at least it's real. At least you're not hiding. And the third thought is this. Share it carefully with somebody you trust implicitly, but courageously. Many of you know that I meet with a friend about once a month. We have lunch together, and then we go for a walk. And I tell him the tough stuff I'm facing. I tell him some of the failures that I've had in the last 4 or 5 weeks, some of the successes, some of the things that I want to pray for. He's allowed to ask me any question. You might think, that's crazy. But actually, it's helped me be whole in a way that I never knew could happen. And actually, breaking the silence works. Some people come and they want to share with me. Somebody shared something incredibly powerful and deep and painful in the summer. And I met with them and they said, it's been amazing. Just breaking the silence has been one of the greatest healing events in my life. So there's some dares there, if you will. Dare to pray a humble prayer. God, I need your help. Dare to be honest enough to write it down, even if you just tear it up straight away. Dare to put it in the hands of somebody you trust and break the silence. There's a beautiful verse in Peter where Peter writes this, above all, love each other deeply. Because love covers over a multitude of sins, a multitude of needs, a multitude of hurts. Love each other deeply. I'm going to sing a final song. It's just simply God in my living. And it's saying, honestly, God being everything that I am, everything that I breathe, everything that I do, everything I say, God be in me. Why? Because God, I need you. God bless you. Thank you.